Welcome to the Dear Mama Project, a personal and spiritual development podcast for mums, where we explore motherhood as a catalyst for personal transformation. My name is Nikki McCann, and each week I will bring you practical tools, personal insights, and inspiring interviews to help you in your own journey of growth and transformation through motherhood. Thank you for tuning in. I am so grateful to have you here, and I can't wait to go on this journey together. Hello and welcome back for the first episode of 2021. In today's episode, I'm chatting with Kate Bayer. Kate is an author and poet based on the East Coast of America who has just released her debut book, What Kind of Woman, which became an instant New York Times bestseller. Before we get into today's chat with Kate, I wanted to give you a few quick messages. At the time of this podcast episode coming out, we're just coming out of Christmas and New Year. I find that this time of year can be really tricky because we can be really out of routine from the Christmas break, and the practices that we have in place to support our well-being might have fallen by the wayside over the break. Not to mention that in some areas we're still experiencing lockdown and not able to do our normal day-to-day activities that keep us feeling grounded and calm. I have personally found that having a morning practice, so a little routine or ritual that I do for myself each morning, can be really grounding and nourishing and helps me make sure that I have my own cup filled up before I have to start giving to other people. I have created a free ebook called Morning Rituals for Mums for anyone who would like to try implementing a morning routine that's practical and quick and no fuss. I totally get that at this stage of life, our mornings can be super tricky with little ones. So everything that's in this ebook is really practical and quick. There's no elaborate routines that require you to meditate on a mountain. It's all super practical and quick tools that can help you feel more grounded and calm. I'm going to include a link to the ebook in the show notes if you want to check it out. And if you do use it and find it helpful, I would absolutely love to hear from you. If you want to send me a DM on Instagram, I always love hearing how you use these tools. Last message is just a big thank you to everyone who's left a review of the podcast on the Apple Podcasts app. From time to time, I like sharing a review that I've received, and I actually saw this one yesterday and it made me super happy. So I wanted to share it with you. So the review is: after really struggling with the transition into motherhood, which finally landed me with PND, this podcast speaks to me on so many levels. It's everything you need to know but don't understand until you're on the other side of giving birth. The idea of birthing a mother is hardly talked about, and I absolutely love this series addressing that. Keep up the great work. Thank you so much. This message really got me in the feels because I had a really similar journey to you, and it makes me super grateful to know that you've been feeling supported by the podcast. And I also 100% agree that there is a huge need to support our rebirth as mothers and this transition period, which has so much potential for us to learn and grow and transform, but it's also a time of huge vulnerability and it really needs to be supported. And I'm super honored to have been a part of that support network for you. So thank you so much for sharing that with me. And thank you for everyone who's left reviews. It really does mean a lot to know how the podcast has helped you. When I am recording this into my microphone doesn't really talk back. So it's always really lovely to hear from you. All right, so let's get into today's episode. Kate Bayer is a number one New York Times bestselling author. She has been featured on publications such as Harper's Bazaar, Vogue.com, Entertainment Weekly, Literary Hub, and A Cup of Joe. Kate's writing captures the unseen, unspoken, and often intangible parts of womanhood, motherhood, marriage, sex, and friendship, while simultaneously pointing out the dysfunctional social and cultural ideals that frame our experiences as women. In this episode, we chat about Kate's own journey of change and transformation through motherhood and her new book, What Kind of Woman. Kate shares some of her writing from the book and we chat about the themes that she explores. It's a total honour to share Kate's work with you. If you haven't met Kate before, I know you're absolutely going to love her. All right, let's get into the interview. Hi, Kate. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm so excited to have you on. I've already mentioned to you, I'm a little bit of a fangirl of your writing, and I'm really excited to share your work and your amazing new book with our community. Can we start with a little bit about you and your journey so far?
Yes, and thank you. And I hope my ugly American accent does not ruin your perception of me. Your beautiful voice right now. Yes, I'm happy to share. I live in Pennsylvania, which is on the East Coast. I been married for 11 years. I have 4 kids, a 9-year-old, a 7-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 2-year-old. What else? What else did you ask? I've been writing on the internet for about 10 years. I started on this book, about a year and a half ago. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. You've got, a beautiful, beautiful family and motherhood journey that you've been sharing. And I'm really looking forward to talking to you about how motherhood has impacted your writing and your experience. Can we also just touch on how you sort of began writing? Was that something that you've always done, or was it something that kind of came through recently, or when did that start for you?
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of always been a writer in elementary school and middle school and high school and, you know, bad writing, of course, but that was kind of my thing. I wasn't very athletic, you know, I did the musical thing, but writing was kind of always what I gravitated to. And I graduated from my university with an English lit major, which, as a lot of us know, is kind of a nothing major. And so I didn't really use my degree, you know, for work. But that is what I studied. I had a lot of random jobs after college. I cleaned out homes and I waited tables and, you know, did all those kind of things. And all the while I did keep writing. I kept it to myself, but tried all sorts of things. And when I got married, my husband decided to kind of change his career path and become a doctor. And so we had to move a lot and we started to have children. And I found myself wanting to kind of get back into writing. And I found myself writing about motherhood a lot. And I started blogging and I started writing, you know, motherhood pieces for Huffington Post. And during that time, I got an agent and we, you know, kind of worked together. And I had gotten to a point where I was kind of tired of talking about myself and talking about motherhood. And I don't know what the literary world is like there, but here it can be a little bit, what's the word I want to use? People are very critical of writing on motherhood, and it can feel kind of niche and not literary. And I felt kind of embarrassed about writing about motherhood. And so I completely changed gears and I started writing a novel and I switched to fiction. I did that for 4 years. And it was wonderful. I learned a lot. What's so funny is that I ended up coming back to motherhood. And after all, I started cheating on my novel with poetry and it kind of took off. And I wrote so much about motherhood after all. And I think about that a lot, how I was kind of stopping my, I was just as misogynistic as the people who were who I felt like were telling me I shouldn't be writing about motherhood. I was adding into that stereotype, and I've kind of come to terms with how, you know, I don't need to be part of that narrative. You know, motherhood is a global experience, and everyone has a mother, for better or for worse. And even if you don't have children, you know, that experience is so central to our existence as humans. And I have really kind of tried to change my thinking on that. And I'm just so, so glad to not kind of be stuck in that mindset anymore. But you know, poetry is new to me, not new reading it or even writing it, but to sharing it. And it's been really fun.
Yeah, well, I'm so glad that you did make that sort of switch. And I can relate a lot to what you're saying in terms of that sort of internalized voice of saying of no one wants to hear about this, or this isn't as important. And it's having those moments, as you said, of that realization that actually, no, this is really important and I can talk about it and it is valuable. I feel like that's just so reflective even of the experience of being a mum. Like it's so undervalued. So then talking about it's undervalued as well.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. I've had such an incredible response of mothers who have said, I feel so seen. And you know, that kind of representation really matters. I even noticed that in, you know, we all on Instagram, you know, I started following people who have bodies that look like mine. And all of a sudden, I didn't know how much of an impact that made, that would make, but it did. And it's the same for everything. I you know, the Black community talks about this a lot. The gay community talks about this a lot. The disabled community talks about like this. Men mothers talk about this a lot. It's like, as soon as you can, as soon as you see yourself reflected back in anything, movies, TV, literature, it's so life-changing, and it gives your life so much value. And what I've heard from mothers especially is that, and I'm so happy to be part of that. And I feel so grateful for the women who've come before me and kind of, you know, paved the way for that.
Yeah, definitely. And I agree 100%. It's so important to see lots of different voices and lots of different perspectives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mainstream sort of narrative. In this podcast, in the work that we do with Dear Mama, we're exploring motherhood as a catalyst for personal transformation and growth. And I feel mm-hmm. like just listening to your story and how your writing kind of came to fruition when you're in that period, was that a time for you or an experience that really kind of was a catalyst for you and your personal growth and transformation?
Yeah, for sure. I think that when you start to put words to feelings, I mean, when I sat down to write this, I didn't know what it would really be about or what the pieces would be. And as I was writing it, I realized I had felt so much anger and so much grief and sadness over especially the early parts of motherhood and how I viewed my body and viewed what it should look like and what it should be like and how a mother kind of should be and what it actually was looked so different and how kind of angry I was that I didn't know and that it wasn't talked about. And it's like you repress a lot. Not, I shouldn't say you, I really pushed away a lot because, you know, when you have kids, you only have the capacity for so much. And I realized there had been so much that I had just kind of pushed away or let go that, that was coming out now. And so it was very cathartic, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I would love to share a little bit of your writing with
sure.
Judy. Would you mind picking a couple of pieces to share with us?
Sure. Absolutely. Is there one in particular?
I love deleted sentences.
Sure,
I love
sure. Absolutely.
That's a really, really big one for me.
Sure. Yes. Okay. This one's called Deleted Sentences. Dear husband, dear lover, dear darling of my heart, no, I do not want to attend the barbecue scheduled cruelly over nap time. I do not want to go to the recital either. Can you tell your sister that too? In the morning, I saw you dancing with our daughter, and for a moment, I almost cried. I hate when people say, I almost cried. Why even mention it at all? What time will you be home? What time do you think you may be home? What time should we wait for you outside on the lawn while the pasta boils over and the baby cries because he misses you? Oh, before I go, what time will you be home? Sometimes I wonder what would happen if you died and I had to write a eulogy while lost in my grief. What would I say? And who would take out the trash bins on dark Sunday nights or hold our children while they cried through fever dreams? When will you be home?
Every time I hear it, I get like super teary because I feel like that just like you're talking about the breadth of the emotion that you experience yeah. in that relationship. And it's so big and so hard to articulate. And I feel like somehow you've managed to do that. Can you tell us how you came to write that piece and what it sort of represented for you?
Sure. You know, there are certain poems that take months to write or weeks to write. And that one kind of came about in an afternoon. I get asked a lot if my work is personal, and I don't even know how to answer that. It's so personal. I wrote that just as it says, and I wrote that because the pasta was overboiling and the kids are on the lawn looking for their dad, and I wrote that from a very personal place, and honestly, in an afternoon where I felt very overwhelmed and didn't have childcare and desperately wanted to work. And when I shared it, the response I think was like I said, women feeling seen in that, and there is so much emotion, especially with very young children who require a lot of physical needs all day. And yeah, I think it just comes from a place of that.
Definitely. And I love at the beginning where it's like the three different ways you describe the husband. And I feel like it's easy to sometimes forget that they are that lover as well. In the monotony of, when will you be home? I need some help. Like very real. And then there's this other side to the relationship as well that kind of like sometimes get lost in the busyness of family.
Yeah. I think that's something that's kind of a universal thing in marriage when you have young children, for sure.
Yeah. Huge. Would you like to pick another one to share with us as well?
Sure. This one's called "For My Daughter on a Bad Day." Life will rough you up, throw you to the shore like a wave crashing, sand in your hair, blood in your teeth. When grief sits with you, hand dipped with rage, let it linger. Hold its pulse in your hands. There is no remedy for a bad haircut or ruined love like time. Even when death is coming, even when the filth rises in the back of your throat, this is not the worst of it. And if it is, listen for the catbird calling. No matter the wreckage, they still sing for you.
That's so beautiful. Do you feel like people push away grief or push away that anger and don't want to feel it and then miss parts?
Yeah, I think that's a human response. I think that's often a mother's response when there's so many needs before your own. For sure, yeah.
Yeah. And when it finishes at the end with the catbird calling, is that for you that there's always some sort of a gift there that's in that pain, or that there's still kindness?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually had someone write to me, and her mother had just passed away, and she had read that piece, and her mother, his name was Catherine, and was always called Catbird, and it kind of makes me cry now when I read that, thinking of her. You know, I didn't know her when I wrote it, but it's just has been really special since then to know that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's incredible that I guess you write from your experiences, but then how each person interprets it's going to be so different based on their own experience.
Yeah.
Has that been magical for you to hear that? And
it's so strange to be on the other side of it. I'll say, you know, I'm such a reader, and I've been, you know, reading my whole life as much as I can. And I feel that way so often in what I'm reading and connected to the author, and to be on the other side of it is a surreal experience. And yeah, I feel so lucky. Yeah.
Is there another piece you'd like to share with us as well?
Sure. I should have, I'm really just kind of randomly picking, if that's okay. I don't have anything that I need to share, but I'm going to just randomly scroll here and pick one. This one's called "Fresh Lemonade."
Beautiful.
Justin gets a real kick out of his wife's lemonade. She makes it from scratch, he says. Not like the other wives with their short haircuts and pale linen suits. Not that there's anything wrong with that, he grins. And look, the gal on my block, she gets up at 4 to care for the dying, and my cousin on 3rd teaches the kids in the south part of town. We need women like them, a real motherly touch. Oh yeah, they agree. Roger says his wife is too busy to work, what with the boys and their schedules and large appetites. Can you believe how much they eat in one sitting, he laughs, never having made a meal big enough to fill more than his plate.
Ooh, that one's amazing. Is that where, when you were, like, my interpretation of that is really about the cultural standards of motherhood and the way that men kind of can impose what they believe wives, women, mothers should be like. Is that sort of what was your...
Yeah. Yeah, especially where I live, I kind of live, I wouldn't say a super rural setting, but kind of. I'm just surrounded by a lot of that attitude. And I, as I get older, and I'm sure you find this as well, every year you get older, you just get a little bit more sick of that kind of attitude and that kind of behavior. And I'm so tired of it. I'm so tired of the narrative that only women can do certain things, the nurturing and the childcare, and like women are good at that. And I'm so sick of it. And it definitely came from that place for sure.
Yeah. It's such a big thing that I feel like when you become a mother, you don't really kind of understand how embedded into our culture these ideals are. And then all right. the time when you become a mother, it's sort of like you get slapped in the face with, this is what it yeah. means to be a good mom, a good wife, a good woman.
Right.
And right. there's that, I actually did a post about this last night. I think we all have that moment of almost trying to live up to that expectation. And then we yeah. realize, oh, wow, this is not for me. Like these rules, they're not actually about making me happy or keeping my family happy.
Right.
They're about sort of just continuing this cycle that benefits people, but not
right.
families and their well-being.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah. But I feel like as well, a lot of people are starting to have more conversations about that. And hopefully the more we talk about it, the more it will
yeah.
sort of stand.
Right. Right. Yeah. I hope so too. I hope so too. And I do see a movement towards that. And I've been so encouraged by so many of the of mothers who've gone before me, but also that are kind of walking with me now. And I really appreciate the bond that has come through having children with other mothers.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe if we can choose one last one to share.
Sure. This one's called Robin Hood. Imagine if we took back our diets, our grand illusions, the time spent thinking about the curve of our form. Imagine if we took back every time we called attention to one or the other, her body, our body, the bad shape of things. Imagine the minutes that would stretch into hours, day after day stolen back like a thief. Imagine the power of loose arms and assurance, the years welcomed home in a soft cotton dress.
That's so beautiful as well. All of them are, but I feel like I can really relate to that one in terms of missing out on life and experiences with my yeah. family, because it's summer here in Australia, and it's I've just gone and bought myself like a nice pair of bathers, and we did a episode last week about body image, because yeah. I definitely missed out on things because I've been worried about what I look like in a pair of clothes.
Yeah. Last summer was like the first summer I let myself wear whatever I wanted. And I couldn't believe it had taken me that long. And I threw out this big drapey swim dress that I had bought, and I bought shorts and overalls and rompers and two-piece bathing suits. And it was life-changing. I mean, I've never been bigger. I've had four kids, but I honestly have never felt better. You know, it wasn't overnight, but it, you know, there's something changing. Maybe it's just me. And the cultural dialogue is changing, as well as I think age, like I said before, I think every year you get older, you kind of take less and less, or at least it has been for me. And it has been such a wonderful discovery to kind of take back that time. I spent so much time worrying about what I looked like, so much like when I get to this size, then I'm going to go on a trip because I'll be able to wear a bathing suit. And how silly to use those parameters to have fun. And yeah, it's something that a demon that I think follows women their whole lives in some form. I don't know if it's possible to completely get rid of it, but I do think that working towards that goal is one of the best things I've done for myself.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you said, you know, there's so much that we then get to gain and experience when we're not sort of living our lives based on what size pants.
Right.
How did you kind of go about that? What was your journey to get to that place?
Well, it's been such a long time coming, but I think changing who I saw on my social media feeds was a huge help. I read a lot of Roxane Gay. She wrote a wonderful book called Hunger. And I do want to say, you know, there's a big difference between trying to be healthy and trying to be thin. You know, one is for ourselves and the other is performative. And I think, you know, when you're living your life for other people, it's really a losing battle. I mean, anytime your life is performative, you're missing out on the good stuff. And I think that's more of it than anything else, is not living for other people. I don't feel good if I eat, you know, 17 pancakes and a piece of cake. That's kind of what I've been thinking more of. It doesn't matter what I look like. It more matters how I feel in my body in all ways. And it's just been so, to change the narrative on that when it's for me and not for anybody else has really helped.
Yeah, I think that's definitely been my experience as well too. I can really relate to what you're saying. And I think as well, when you become a mother, there is a huge focus on your body from the moment you're pregnant. You know, people will comment on the shape of your body. And then and afterwards, there's this huge focus on body. And I don't really feel like there's another time in your life where your body is such a central focus to you. And that combined with then as soon as you kind of have your baby, then there's this huge pressure to bounce back, in inverted commas. I think that having people, as you said, representing different bodies and talking about that there's another option is really important, particularly at that time where there is so much focus on what you look like.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much vulnerability at the start of motherhood. It's, you know, you have, especially the first baby, you know, you have the birth of the baby, but you also have the birth of the mother, and, you know, everything is new and everything is frightening. And you're worried about so many things. Is the baby breathing? Is the baby eating? Is the baby pooping? And then to add in, and do I look okay? Is, you're adding so much room for failure there. And it's so frustrating. It's an environment ripe for shame. And I'm continually disappointed by media and their portrayal of mothers. And I really hope that as we move forward, we can kind of paint a different and a more realistic picture of mothers.
Yeah. There's a beautiful quote that I heard from you, which I have shared a few times on my Instagram because I just love it. and it's all about this topic. So I think it'd be really good to talk about this too. So I'm going to quote you back to you.
Sure.
We live in a culture where a mother's pregnant body is beautiful until the moment she gives birth. That's when it's time to wrap things up, tuck away the evidence, and apologize for the mess. For me personally, the body I had after birth is the one that led to transformation. I feel like that was such a powerful message to share. And I so relate that, you know, the whole process of pregnancy is kind of idealized in so many ways. And then birth is such an incredible feat of our bodies, and then it's just straight into, okay, now pretend it didn't happen.
Yeah. And even though I mentioned that kind of garbage media, I think another thing that needs to change is kind of the conversation and how we talk as women about our bodies and other people's bodies is extremely important. I can remember being in postpartum groups for mothers and hearing other moms say, oh, I look so fat and I can't get into my jeans and I don't want to be in a room with my husband with a light on. And even though I understood those sentiments, I felt very sad about those kind of conversations, because when you put down your own body, you're putting down the person next to you, especially if they look different than you. And I think that, to me, that is the most important part to change. That is the number one thing to change, is how we talk about ourselves in front of other people. Of course, you know, honesty is important in how we feel in our bodies, but there is a way to talk about it without putting others down. And I think supporting women starts with women. for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And I love that you also talk about how the postpartum body was the one that led to the transformation. Can you kind of expand on that a little bit?
I mean, it's taken a lot of time. I've been a mom for almost 10 years, and it's taken about that amount of time to really come into myself. But I don't know if we can talk about this. We talk about anything, but I do feel like the best sex I've ever had, the best, the most, you know, alive in my body has happened after I've had people inside of my body, grown humans in my body, and kind of seen the resiliency of myself, you know, emotionally and mentally and physically. I feel stronger. I feel more like myself than I ever had. And even though it took kind of hitting rock bottom after children, the postpartum feelings, you know, depression and just feeling not myself in my body and breastfeeding, coming out of those stages and feeling even stronger has led to so much of how I now see myself. And I'm so thankful to be on the other side of that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like that's a really empowering message to send someone who's currently, you know, in the thick of the struggle.
Yeah.
Because it can feel like when you're there, like, oh, I don't know if my body's ever going to feel like mine again. And so,
right.
And I think sharing that, you know, you can get through that and not only get through it, but have more love and appreciation and feel more embodied.
It kind
of sounds like is a really cool message to share.
Yeah. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. I would love to talk to you about your incredible book. What kind of?
Oh yeah.
Yes. So can you tell us what the journey was to go through creating that?
Yeah, it was kind of a solitary process. I mean, once the book deal was acquired and I kind of wrote it very much alone. And I don't even mean that in a bad way, but I did write that pretty much by myself. I didn't send it really to anyone else except for my editor. And I wrote that over the course of about a year, a lot of it in a concentrated time in about 6 months. But yeah, it felt like a book that had been waiting to be written for a long time, but it felt like it was inside me. I know that sounds so cliche, but it felt like it had been building up to this. I was writing a novel, a thriller, and somehow it was still kind of just beneath the surface. And it doesn't mean it was necessarily easy, but it did feel right. That's the best way I can describe it. And it's so strange for it to be out there now, because like I said, I didn't really show it to anybody. It was really just my own thing for so long, but it's been really fun.
And the title, how did you come up with the title?
My editor read the manuscript and pulled it from a piece.
Yeah, such an epic title, I feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. I really like it too.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And for you, I feel like, you know, writing a book and, you know, as you said, sort of like keeping it close and almost like protecting it from the outside world,
yeah,
was still in its infancy, and now having it out in the world. Do you have like a big dream of how you hope the book travels through communities of women?
I hope women feel seen in their bodies and in their marriages and in their lives. Right now, you know, mothers are so, I can't speak for you, but in America, we're kind of being expected to shoulder this brunt of childcare and responsibility in this pandemic. And I hope this book acts like a confirmation of worth and like someone who gets it and understands and is kind of angry on your behalf. It's been very difficult here to be expected to take care of all the domestic responsibility in this pandemic. And so I did not write this book during COVID, but now that it's here and has clashed with this time, it does feel timely in some ways. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like it's all divine timing then to have it out at this moment. And definitely I feel like, in Australia too, there's been a lot of the pressure women carry that weight, you know, it kind of,
it
almost highlights any of the systems that were already there that maybe we weren't as aware of, and kind of puts a light on those and shows just how much women are expected to pick up the slack. I've got two more questions for you. One of them is, one of the downsides of being online, you know, sharing your work and having a presence online, is that we're always going to come up against people who don't get us or who don't kind of understand what we're about. And you do this incredible thing where you get messages from people maybe like that who are being a little bit rude or a bit unkind, and you make poetry from it. Can you tell us how that happened and what kind of led you to doing that and what the outcome's been?
Yeah, I mean, I was deleting those kind of messages for a long time because, you know, I just, that seemed like the best thing to do. And then one day I had the idea, I was kind of reading one, kind of irritated. And I was thinking about, I was kind of looking at the words and they were kind of rearranging in front of me a little bit. And I thought about, what if I kind of blacked this out and kind of flipped the narrative on what it was saying. And it ended up being pretty life-giving. I don't know how long I'll keep up with it, but for now it does feel like a powerful way to take something hateful and make it worth reading. I feel like pretty good about it. I think it's fun. And it really takes the power away from the original statement.
Yeah, I love reading them. I feel like it's totally making art out of hate. So I feel like that's incredible.
Yeah.
My last question for you is, reflecting back on the journey that you've been on since you became a mum, if you could go back to the version of yourself who had just received and was holding her first baby and was about to embark on this huge journey, what would you want her to know?
My new mom self. I think that I would say it's going to get so much easier and so much harder, and so you might as well lighten up. I honestly don't know if I would tell her anything. There's so much revelation that comes, you know, through the process of motherhood. I mean, over the last decade, I've had 4 children, and each one kind of pulled me from myself a little more, until I had to do a lot of backpedaling and a lot of reclaiming my time and my mind and my body. And I had to sit, you know, with the discomfort of who I was and who everyone else wanted me to be. And I think, you know, that led to so much growth that I think it was important to go through that. And, you know, you can feel 2 feelings at the same time. We have this little cartoon tiger that sings that to kids here in America. I don't know if you have Daniel Tiger, but you can love being a mother, and you can also want to be away from your children, and you can love your husband selflessly and also, you know, desire independence and equity in marriage. And you can be a poet and also watch trash TV on Friday night with a big bag of chips. And, you know, motherhood often asks us to choose either or. And, you know, I've learned that we can have both. And I think the journey was really important to that.
Yeah, I love that. And it's so, 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 so true. And a friend said this to me one day, and she was like, you can't rob someone of their rock bottom, because that's a gift. Like, even though it's really hard to watch or to see someone in pain, that pain is really transformative, and that leads them to who they're becoming. And you almost don't want to take that from someone.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Kate. It's been such a pleasure to have you on the podcast. I'm going to include links to your books and to your Instagram in the show notes for anyone who wants to check it out. And just a big thank you again for sharing your work.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much for having me. This was so fun.
Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. If you've enjoyed it, I would absolutely love to hear from you. You can take a screenshot and tag me on Instagram. I am at Dear Mama Project. I would really love to know your thoughts on the episode and if there was anything in particular you really connected with. If you're enjoying the Dear Mama podcast and would like to leave a review on the Apple Podcast app, I would be super grateful. And if you do leave a review, grab a screenshot and send me a DM and I'll send you a little thank you for your time. I hope you have a wonderful week and I will see you again soon.